So this past week has been the first week of spring, technically, right? My family, there's a number of people on the prayer team. They've been praying for us. We've had congestion. We've been fighting. Stuffy noses. Elizabeth, our 2.5-month-old, has this little baby cough, which is horrible, and Faith and Evelyn as well. But it is the first week of spring, just in case you need to know that. And I don't know if there's any baseball fans here, but that means that opening day, actually for the Tigers, is this Thursday. Doesn't exactly feel like baseball weather to us. They're actually playing in New York against the Yankees, and I think on Thursday it's going to be like 40 degrees maybe here. I don't know what it's going to be in New York. I hope it's warmer for those guys. But by the way, there is a T-shirt in that regard that I found on the internet that you can purchase. Made in the USA. Even Jesus hates the Yankees. And part of the reason why I wanted to include this is Craig Mays was here a few weeks ago. And last time he preached at Kensington, he had the audacity of putting on one of those New York Yankees baseball caps, which was just horrible. So, Craig, if you are listening to this podcast, T-shirt, Even Jesus Hates the Yankees, made in the USA. So, anyway. So, hey, we've been doing a series here at Eastside Vineyard, the Gospel of Matthew, looking at it story by story, starting right in verse 1, chapter 1, and walking through what Matthew and how he wrote the Gospel 2,000 years ago, the Gospel about Jesus Christ. And the first few chapters have been on the Christmas story, which is kind of interesting to be doing that in February and March. But the reason why I chose to look at Matthew's Gospel and to do it this way is oftentimes when you go to a Christmas service on Christmas Eve, you hear the same details, the same story every single year. And there are some details, like last week we looked at part of the Christmas story has King Herod slaughtering 2-year-old boys in the little town of Bethlehem. And that's not exactly Christmas Eve material. But it's in there for a reason. We believe God inspired every single word on every single page of the Bible. And so it's in there for a reason. So we've been looking at the Christmas narrative story by story. Next week, we're going to be in chapter 3 of Matthew, which actually fast forwards the story about 27 years. But we're wrapping up in chapter 2 this week. This is actually the last part of the Christmas narrative according to Matthew. And so what I want to do tonight, like I've been doing the past few weeks, is looking at it and looking at details that we typically pass right over, that we typically don't talk about. So since this is the last week of the series, I want tonight to stand alone. So in case you're brand new here, if this is your first time here, thank you for coming. We believe that this is not an accident that you're here, that God brought you here for a purpose, and our prayer every single Sunday night at this church is that you don't just go to church, but you have an experiential encounter with God. And I pray if it hasn't happened during worship, that it will later, maybe throughout, maybe as I'm teaching, maybe during communion, maybe during prayer, maybe as we sing some more songs at the end of the service. But I wanted to give you a quick review since, again, we're wrapping up the Christmas story. This is like part 6 of this. So to catch you up to where we're at, and there's going to be a trivia question here, see if anybody can get it right. We begin in chapter 1 of Matthew's Gospel, looking at the first 17 verses, which was the genealogy or the family tree of Jesus, understanding that Jesus, God in the flesh, was born with Jewish blood. And here's the trivia question. He was in the line of David. Does anybody remember the number that was significant in that story? 14. Yeah. 14, and 14 was the numeric equivalent in Hebrew for the name of David, and it was just shouting out to the Jewish readers, this is about the line of David, and this is King David, and all their hopes and aspirations were wrapped up in this number 14. So we looked at that actually on February 20th. Then we fast forward looking at the birth of Jesus, and that week we unpacked this 700-year-old prophecy written by Isaiah, and we learned that week something interesting, that Jesus is called Emmanuel, literally God with us, but he wasn't the first Emmanuel on the scene. There was actually an Emmanuel as a contemporary of Isaiah that was born. Not Jesus, not God in the flesh, but there wasn't Emmanuel. So we looked at that week. Then we went to the next part of the story, the visit of the Magi, and that one was titled We Three Kings. We learned that there were probably more than three of them, and they weren't kings. That was based on a Christmas carol and tradition, which is interesting. And we talked about an interesting theory about what the Christmas star was and how it might have actually been an angel as opposed to the star that is billions of miles up. And then last week, again, I mentioned briefly the escape to Egypt. I challenged you over this past week, and I hope you accepted my challenge. The message was titled, Pay No Attention to That Man Behind the Curtain. And at the end of the message, I had you take out your program and cross out the word no, to pay attention to that man behind the curtain. And that man behind the curtain, man's in quotation marks, is Satan. And we looked at spiritual warfare, something that we often, I don't think, talk about enough in churches in America. And my challenge to you in that was to take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. So any of those wayward thoughts that kind of get thrown at you, that lead you down paths that God doesn't want you to take those thoughts captive. And maybe even I challenge you to quote that Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12 verse that talks about spiritual warfare, that our battle is not against flesh and blood. So that's where we have been. And it has been a really, really cool journey for me. I've learned so much. Worship for me primarily is not through singing. It's through engaging God with my mind. And every single week that I get to preach, the preparation is worship for me. And it has been a very, very fun series. So this week, we're diving into the final part of the Christmas narrative. And I want to read verses 13 through 16. This is picking up a few of the verses last week where we left off, because again, the story continues. It's one long narrative. So let me read where we were last week, just a few of the verses, and then we're going to dive into where we're at this week. So here we go. Last week, Matthew chapter 2, verses 13 starts here. It says, when they had gone, an angel of the Lord, they is the Magi. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, get up, take the child and his mother, that's Jesus and Mary, escape to Egypt, stay there until I tell you, for Herod, King Herod, is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where they stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled the prophecy that the Lord had said through Isaiah, out of Egypt I called my son. When Herod realized he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. He gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. So that, again, that was a story that we saw last week. And now we don't know how much time lapsed in between verse 18 and verse 19, how many months they spent in Egypt. But now we're going to pick up in verse 19 and read through verse 23. This is, again, the last section of the Christmas narrative. And I use the NIV Study Bible. This is my copy. And in the NIV, this is titled The Return to Nazareth. So again, a few months go by. We have a little bit of a gap in time. And here's what it says, starting in verse 19. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read through this passage straight through, and then we're going to look at it verse by verse and then apply it to us in the year 2011. So Matthew chapter 2, verse 19. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead. So he got up, took the child and his mother, went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea, in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee and went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets. He will be called a Nazarene. So again, last part of the Christmas story. And we're going to be looking at a number of details in these verses that we typically overlook. Verses and details that Christmas carols don't sing about, that manger scenes never talk about, even though this is the final part of the Christmas story. So let's take a look one section at a time. And before I do, let me pray. Father, I felt compelled at this moment to pray to you. This message is about listening for your voice, and I felt like I just listened to it and the fact that I need to pray to commit this to you this time. I pray for gifts of faith to be released in people who are here. I pray, God, that you speak powerfully through my words. May they be your words. I pray, Jesus, as I pray every single week, that you take me off the page, that I believe you've guided me in the preparation of this message over this past week. God, guide me off the page as well and show me in these moments if there's anything that I wasn't planning on teaching, lead me and guide me there as well. Thanks, Jesus, for this day. Amen. All right, so here we go. Matthew chapter 2, verses 19 and 20. We're going to start here. After Herod died, An angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these verses, because this really frames where we're going in the next few. We looked at last week, and I just read that King Herod had every child, every boy, every male, 2 years and under, massacred. And that's why Joseph and Mary and Jesus fled to Egypt to protect Jesus from being killed. So in verse 19, an angel supernaturally appears to Joseph while he's sleeping in a dream, while they're in Egypt, and he tells them, hey, King Herod is dead. The king who ordered this execution, this massacre of the innocents, is dead. So now in verse 21. So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Now, this is I want to camp on these verses for quite a bit here. See, again, we don't know how long they spent in Egypt. It was probably several months. An angel speaks to Joseph. The angel spoke to Joseph initially and said, flee. And now this angel speaks to Joseph again, says, now it's safe to return to Israel. So there's it's an 80-plus mile journey. And again, they don't have, like, speed rails there. It's like a camel, donkey, 80-mile journey with a young child, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, going back to their homeland. But the verse says that a guy named Archelaus was reigning in Judea. Now, I need to give you some background on him, because this is a guy that you don't hear about all that much, but that detail, again, Matthew is specific. Everything he writes down is for a purpose and a reason. So Archelaus is reigning. You need to understand that as King Herod, we talked about last week, he was paranoid. He killed some of his children, killed one of his wives. He was so paranoid, he wrote and rewrote his will right before he was going to die. And he realized that Rome was not going to give him as much power, give his successor as much power. So he decided he wanted to keep this region, the Holy Land, in the family. So his proposal was, I'm going to split this up four ways. I'm going to split up between three of my sons and then one other person. His three sons were Archelaus, Antipas, and Philip. And we have a map here that shows you how Herod's kingdom, he initially, you got the brown and the purple and some green and some red. That Herod, when he was king, he ruled it. That's the entire Holy Land. But then after he died, he divided the territory up. And there's three names. There's a fourth one I'm going to mention in just a minute. But he divided his kingdom upon his death. So his one son, Archelaus, ruled over the red area there, which is Judea and Samaria. And then above the purple and then down to the right of Judea and Samaria is Antipas, who's also called Herod Antipas, sometimes Herod in the Bible. We're going to hear about him in the Gospel of Matthew quite a bit. That's Herod or Herod Antipas, one of his sons. Then Herod Philip, or simply Philip, ruled the area of Iturea and Trachonitis. There's a fourth person that's not listed on there. He ruled an area called Abilene. Really don't know much about this person. But Herod's kingdom, you need to understand, his kingdom, he dies, he divides his kingdom up into four ways. So each son, sometimes they're called kings, but they're technically a tetrarch. And I wrote that just in case you're taking notes, and I encourage you to do that on the left side of your program. Tetrarch means a ruler of a fourth. And you'll hear that phrase, and it's kind of a weird one to spell, so I want to have that. It means ruler of a fourth, so they're sometimes called kings, but technically they're tetrarchs. And this is a verse that uses that word that explains kind of who ruled which area. So it's right in the Bible in Luke chapter 3, verse 1. It says, in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, it's the emperor, when Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, Herod was tetrarch of Galilee, his brother Philip, tetrarch of Iturea and Trachonitis, and Licinius, tetrarch of Abilene. Now that name, Licinius, only appears there. Don't really know anything about him. My main focus is on Archelaus, because he's who's mentioned in Matthew 2, verse 22. And again, we're going to come back to Herod Antipas or Herod Philip in the future of Matthew's gospel as we work through it over the next several months. So here's some information about Archelaus. He reigned as the tetrarch, or you could just call him the king if you want to, starting in 4 BC. And right off the bat, he was to chip off the old block. His father, King Herod, bloodthirsty and ruthless, slaughtered children, and as they say, an apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So Archelaus in history began ruling in a very infamous way. There was this uprising in the temple, in the Jewish temple, during the Feast of Passover, and it wasn't anything major. But he sent in just this shock and awe technique, and he had 3,000 people slaughtered right off the bat to show people, hey, there's a new sheriff in town. You thought my dad was rough and iron fist? You got another thing coming. Just wait. And so the reputation of Archelaus preceded him. Matthew 2:22, let me reread that verse. It says, when they heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea, in place of his father Herod, that he, Joseph, was afraid to go there. Of course. This guy, on like, you know, his opening inauguration slaughters 3,000 people. He was such a bad tetrarch or king that actually he got deposed by the Roman Empire. Caesar Augustus was in fear there was going to be an uprising in Judea. So they had an ancient version of The Apprentice back then. And Caesar Augustus was Donald Trump, probably with better hair. And he fired. And it's crazy. Like, this is like a backwoods area of the Roman Empire. It's not like the emperors are going, hey, what's going on over in Judea? They don't care about that. But this guy was slaughtering people. They were afraid of an uprising. And it wasn't just to protect the Jewish people. They could care less about the Jewish people. It's the taxes. So they didn't need to keep people alive because dead people can't pay taxes. And so this guy, Archelaus, actually got deposed in 6 AD. And that reigning got taken over by Roman governors, a series of governors, Pontius Pilate being one of them. So when you get in Luke chapter 3, verse 1, it talks about in the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar that Pontius Pilate's named Archelaus is long gone, 20 years long gone. So when Jesus begins his preaching career, he doesn't focus on Archelaus at all. It's not mentioned, again, long gone. It's now all about Pontius Pilate. Roman governors took over, which is pretty interesting to think about. Again, Archelaus is not one of those names you hear, but it's in there for a reason. So let me read and continue, verses 22 and 23. It says, having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to a district of Galilee. He went to live in a town called Nazareth, and so was fulfilled what was said through the prophets. He will be called a Nazarene. So once again, God speaks to Joseph supernaturally, most likely by an angel. Text doesn't say. And he warns them to stay out of the region controlled by Archelaus. So they head north to the district of Galilee to the town called Nazareth. Again, here's the map. So they bypass the red area, and they head up to the purple area where it says Antipas. That's where Nazareth is. And Matthew says something interesting. At the end of this verse, he said, so was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, he will be called a Nazarene. Now here's what's interesting about that. In the preceding two chapters, one of the reasons why I chose Matthew as the gospel that I wanted to begin teaching at this church is there's all these prophecies and allusions and quotes to the Old Testament. And we often don't read the Old Testament all that much as 21st century American Christians, so I wanted to reference as much as I can the Old Testament and bring that in and hopefully encourage you to read, because that's two-thirds of the Bible. But here's what's interesting, is that when Matthew says that, he's actually not quoting from an Old Testament chapter and verse. Four other times so far he's quoted, and every single time he quotes a prophet, it's obvious who he's quoting from. But this time, he's actually not quoting from the Old Testament specifically because that verse isn't in there. Instead, and if you look, it says this, so was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, plural. Not the prophet, not Isaiah or Hosea, but the prophets. In other words, he's saying there's a general theme here. There's something going on that over and over again, this quotation is saying over and over again, prophecies are that the Messiah is going to be despised, that the Messiah is going to come from a lowly place. Now, again, we talked about this before. I would think, man, if I was God coming to earth, it'd be like this fanfare, angels going on. You'd have an honor guard, born in the right place, the right bloodline. But instead, Jesus is born in this backwoods village, right? And he's saying that he will be called a Nazarene. It's pointing out a theme that the Messiah is going to be despised from a lowly place. Nazareth fits that description to a T. The Jews, now think about that. 2,000 years ago, the Jews thought of Nazareth like we think of the Cass Corridor. That kind of thing. Or how the rest of the NFL thinks of the Lions. Now you guys got it. But not this year. Yeah, right. Nazareth is despised. It is a lowly place. Now here's a quotation from the Gospel of John about the reputation Nazareth had back then, and I love this quote. In John chapter 1, verse 45 and 46, it says, Philip found Nathanael and told them, we have found the one, they're talking about Jesus, we have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And then, I love Nathanael, he says, Nazareth, can anything good come from there? Saying, okay, I understand that the Messiah is supposed to be coming from a lowly place, but man, not Nazareth. Come on. But in fact, Jesus did. Which is very interesting to me. And what's also fascinating to me is that this completes the circle. The circle is complete. That ends that prophecy, which isn't really a prophecy about, again, he'll be called a Nazarene. That's where the Christmas story ends. And it completes the circle to where the story began. And again, I love this because this type of detail inspires me to pick up the Bible more than I do. And I hope it inspires you to do that too. Here's how the Christmas story began according to Luke's gospel. Luke chapter 2, verses 1 to 4. And now you're going to have visions of like Linus, Charlie Brown Christmas special here. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. Everyone went to his own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house of David. Again, going full circle. A few years earlier, while Mary is still pregnant with Jesus, this family of two that was about to become a family of three leaves Nazareth, heads to Bethlehem, stays there for a couple of years. Jesus is born. Then they flee to Egypt, stay there for several months or longer. King Herod dies. They travel back. They want to avoid King Archelaus, or the Tetrarch Archelaus, so they go back to where they began, to Nazareth and Galilee. And again, that's how the Christmas story ends. This journey that lasted probably about 3 years. And what's interesting then is that Matthew stops. Chapter 2 ends. Next week, we're picking up chapter 3, and we have this 27-year-ish time gap. So next time we see Jesus, he's about 30 years old. But before we dive in to next week, I want to apply. Every single week, what I want to do is pull out details that, again, we often overlook. Not to have you go, wow, that's cool. But hopefully you do say, wow, that's cool. My hope in doing that at the beginning is, first of all, to help you and inspire you to pick this book up more than you do. That you, probably, if you're like our house, you have a few Bibles, not just one, and they can easily be covered in dust. And then I want to just unpack details and inspire you, hopefully, to open up, maybe to buy a study Bible and to read the details for yourself and to realize, man, God can speak to you through this book. He can lead you, can show you. So I want to unpack details of it, but then I also want to apply it. I just want to make this a history kind of teaching because you can watch that on the History Channel. I want to apply it to us and say, all right, everyone is brought here for a purpose and a reason tonight, March 27th. So what is the application for us tonight? And the application I want to unpack is the theme that's actually throughout the first two chapters of Matthew's gospel. The theme has to do with God speaking to people, either directly or indirectly. Again, mentions it several times. In tonight's passage, this theme shows up twice. First in verses 19 and 20, and then verse 22. I'm going to read these again to refresh your memory. It says, after Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream in Egypt and said, get up, take the child and his mother, go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead. And then verse 22, again, having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee and went and lived in a town called Nazareth. Again, we don't know who spoke there, but the assumption is it was that angel of the Lord spoke in verse 22 and tells him very specifically what to do. Now, who would want that type of guidance? You don't know what's going on tomorrow. You go to sleep. You have a dream. God speaks to you, either directly or through an angel. You get up the following day, you know, Guess what, honey? We're selling the condo. Going to Egypt. Why? God told me. Did you eat pizza last night? You know, I mean, who wouldn't want that type of guidance? I love to dream. I'm a very lucid dreamer. Man, Kelly, it's like, you got to strap me down in bed because I'm kind of doing this. Some of my favorite dreams personally is having the ability to fly. Love those dreams. In fact, when I married Kelly, I had a recurring dream. And you can ask her tonight. I had a recurring dream, not just that I could fly, but I was a superhero. And I would wake her up, and this was like a few nights a week, like, you wouldn't believe the dream that I had. It was like Superman and Aquaman and, you know, the Green Lantern, Captain America, all kind of rolled up into one. And those were very, very cool dreams. But as cool as those dreams were, flying, being a superhero, imagine falling asleep and having an angel show up, and you know it's an angel. And imagine that for a minute. That God speaks to you, tells you exactly what to do. Now, unfortunately, that has never happened to me. I wish it would. I wish it will. I can't control that. But it's got me thinking about God speaking to us. And I think, and this is something, I don't want to blow past this, because I believe that God still speaks to people in dreams. Because God is supernatural, he can do whatever he wants to do. But that's not really the application, because if it was, the application would be really short. God speaks to you through dreams. So step one tonight, action step, go to bed. Step two, dream, you know. Not that you can control that, right? So while I believe that God still speaks to people through dreams, I don't want to focus on that, but before I jump into the application, I do want to say this, because I don't want to blow past this and just make a joke about it. In Acts chapter 2, verses 16 to 17, Peter speaks, and he quotes from an Old Testament prophet, Joel. It says this, "This is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams." He's not talking about dreams of like flying around being superheroes here. I mean, there is a supernatural element. He says, in the last days, and we're in them. So Peter's quoting from the Old Testament. He is saying, and I don't think this is like gender specific, so it's like, okay, like, sorry, women, old women, you know, you can't dream dreams. It's because he goes down that verse. But he's saying there's going to be prophecy, there's going to be visions, and there's going to be dreams. So maybe, honestly, an action step would be for you to ask God to give you the gift of spiritual gift of prophecy. Actually says that in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 1. It says, eagerly desire spiritual gifts, especially the gift of prophecy. Especially. To ask God to give you supernatural visions, to ask God to speak to you in your dreams, not that you would have some really cool ability or power and be able to show off, but that you could use that, that God could speak through you to people to bless them, that God could speak through you, give you instruction on what to do tomorrow so that you could join him in his work to make his kingdom come and his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. See, when God gifts us with things, it's not ultimately to bless us. It's to bless through us to others. So as I thought about that, like initially, and I've been refining this talk all week, I added Acts 2 last night, actually after talking to Kelly and saying, "No, that's a challenge. It's a prayer." It's like, again, we can't control what God does. We can ask him for it. So ask God to give you gifts of prophecy, to see visions, and to dream dreams. I actually had a conversation with a guy, and I don't remember, I'm having a bunch of lunch and breakfast appointments, just met a guy who had a vision. He told to me, he's like, "I was not sleeping when this happened. It happened, and it was so cool." God still does that stuff. But instead of just talking about how God speaks to us in dreams, something that we ultimately can't control besides asking God for it, I want to use that theme as a launching pad and talk about how God speaks to us in general, because this is a huge topic. See, as believers and followers of Jesus, we don't believe that God is mute. We do not believe that God is distant and uncaring. We use language that God wants to have a personal relationship through you, a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And you cannot have a personal relationship with someone if you don't talk to them, if you don't communicate. You talking to them and also them talking to you. That we need to be able to recognize the voice of God, the voice of Jesus, when he communicates to us. And in fact, Jesus says that in John's gospel. John 10:27, he says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me." And Jesus is not lying there. "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me." So these verses are saying that we know the voice of God, or at least we ought to, so that when God speaks to us, we hear him and we know it's him. And again, it would be very easy if God always spoke to us exclusively through dreams. But it normally doesn't work that way. And if speaking to us through dreams was the only way that God did communicate to his children, then I would have to say that God never spoke to me. Because again, God never spoke to me through a dream. But I know that's not true. I know that God has spoken to me. Big ways and in small ways. See, this is what I believe. I believe that God did not get laryngitis at some point over the last 2,000 years. See, back in the days of the Bible, God spoke to people all the time, and I believe that God is speaking to us all the time. And I believe he speaks to us the same way he did in Bible times, using the same ways. God can speak to us in dreams and visions and an audible voice through other people, through a still small voice. And it's such an important topic. On the back of your program, there's a number of recommended resources, and I encourage you to pick up at least one, if not all of them, because it is a phenomenally important topic. And these authors can help you tune into the voice of God, and I'll talk more about that in a minute, but just want to point out on the back of the program, if you didn't know they were there, they're suggested resources. But instead of giving you a bunch of examples, saying, I felt God speak to me here, and here's how I felt God speak to me there, I want to share this one story, which really paints a picture, I believe, about how God speaks to us, every single one of us, all the time. See, while God can speak to us in a dream, he can speak to us in a vision, he can speak to us in a booming voice that comes out of heaven. I feel like God speaks to us every day, not by those means, but by the means described in this story from the Old Testament. I'm not really giving you any context, but let me read you 1 Kings verse 19, verses 11 to 13. This is how I think God speaks to us. It says, "The Lord said to Elijah the prophet, 'Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by.' Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face, went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. And then a voice said to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?'" See, the point of this passage, and I love this. This is one of those 1 Kings, verse 19, verse 11 through 13. I love it. It says that the point is that God is not oftentimes in the powerful, the wind and the earthquake and the fire, but he's in the gentle whisper. See, oftentimes God does not shout to us. He whispers. He whispers through what theologians call a still, small voice. And the still, small voice oftentimes is not audible. It's more of a nudge internally in your spirit. It's more of an impression, a feeling, a sense that God is speaking to you. If you remember last week, I mentioned talking about spiritual warfare, how I believe Satan is attacking our minds all day long and firing thoughts that aren't ours. And we're hearing this and we're accepting these thoughts as our own. They're coming from a foreign source that's not good. And I think the same thing is happening on the positive side we're talking about this week. That I believe God also invades our minds and whispers good things, good thoughts. It's a nudge, it's an impression, it's a feeling. Bill Hybels in his book, he calls it a whisper of God. And I believe God speaks to us all day long during this manner if we are paying attention. It was a few days ago, I was in my office, it was on Thursday. I'm working on my message and I get to the application part and I'm asking God, show me what you want me to talk. How do I want to apply this? How do I want to challenge the people who come to church on Sunday night? So Faith, if you saw her running around, she's 3, she's almost 4, just as extroverted as I am introverted. It is amazing. She just has this personality about her. So she comes into my office. It's downstairs in the basement. And at first I'm like, did mom, you know, because we don't want her to go down the stairs by herself, but she went down the stairs by herself, and I'm like, okay, that's all right. You use the railing. I use the railing. And so she wants to show me this drawing and help understand, like, she comes through the door this way, and my computer's here, and I just kind of turn. I do about a 30-degree turn. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Because I'm reading this book by Bill Hybels, you know, Power of a Whisperer, it's like a 250-page book, and I want to get through it to just process this for an application. So, man, I'm working on my message, you know? God is speaking to me, right? And so I kind of turn. I do like a third of the way turn, and Faith, we had birthday parties last night for a bunch of family members, and so she's kind of showing me this drawing that she made for her cousin Rachel, and in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, how can I, and this would not win me the dad of the year, okay? But if you're a parent, you've been there. It's like, okay, how can I acknowledge my daughter but get back to work? And so I'm like, oh, that's nice, cutie pie, and said something. And then in that moment, as I'm not even facing her, I felt that nudge, that impression, that feeling. I felt like God say, don't miss this. And I realized, I was reminded that Faith is named Faith because we had infertility struggles for 2.5 years. Almost didn't know we were going to have kids. Now we have 3 girls. It's awesome. But she's a gift. She's precious. And yeah, I got work to do, and it's important. But how much time is she really going to need from me? Maybe 2 minutes? And so I turned all the way around, show me your picture. And she had this rainbow, and it was like black and gray and brown, you know. Like, it's like, that's beautiful, honey, you know. And she showed, oh, that's for Rachel, and I just tell me all the details. Tell me. And I fully engaged, it was like right here, and I'm like holding her. And it was just 2 minutes. And she has so much energy. She just shot out of my office as quick as she came in. After I just, you know, I was tracking with her, and I was like holding her little, you know, holding her arms and showing me that. And what's that? Those are little balloons that don't really look like balloons, but that's great, you know. Rainbow's perfect. And what's on the backside? And you almost wrote her name right, kind of, you know. You got 3 of the letters right. It's just beautiful, honey. And she took off, and I turned back around with my book, opened it back up, and I felt like God say, and again, it was that nudge. It wasn't the audible voice. I couldn't put it in quotation marks. You almost missed it. You almost missed that. Now, she probably doesn't even remember that, but I remember that. And that's what matters. Almost missed it. How many times during the day do we miss it? Little things. That was not a world-changing encounter for her, but it mattered. It's my little 3-year-old that her daddy had enough time to put his book down, stop his work, and fully engage with his little girl. So I want to share that example because that's an example right out of everyday life. It's not something profound. There's not this major ramification that day if I missed it, if I ignored her. But it was significant. And I think that's the usual way that God speaks to us all day long. We just simply need to hear what he's saying. This is, I think, also the 3rd week out of 4 weeks that I've cried on stage. Thanks for praying, Kent. He's like, I'm praying the Holy Spirit breaks you on stage. And I'm like, all right, that's all good, man. So in this, we need to be able to hear what God's saying because he's speaking to us all the time. It's a conviction of mine. So there's actually a suggested resource, and I'm pretty excited because Jeff Petherick's actually here. He wrote the book Wavelength. And he's not giving me any kickbacks for promoting his book. But I have a quote I want to share because I love the book's phenomenal. Kelly read it, loves it. Very readable. And Jeff is an everyday, ordinary guy who says, man, God's speaking to me all day too. Not in a weird, freaky way. Just God, like he speaks to all of us. So here's a quote right at the beginning of the book. It says this. At this moment, again, you probably didn't even realize it until I'm going to say it right now, but this is true. At this moment, hundreds of radio signals are beaming through the air right now, whether you know it or not. And radio waves are only the beginning. With the right gear tuned to the right wavelength, you can access an invisible spectrum of commercial, military, and emergency signals. It skips down a little bit and says, the point is, the transmitters are on. But if you're not tuned in, you will live your life as if the signals don't exist, just like God's voice. See, Jeff, he is right on. Just like radio waves are around us right now. Don't realize it. God's voice is speaking to us all day long, but we often live as if it doesn't exist because we aren't tuned into it. Yesterday, I was talking to Kelly, and I was explaining where we were going tonight, and I wanted to land again on the application, on the key takeaway, and I always thought, do I go here, do I land here, do I land there? And Kelly said this, and it was one of those moments where God speaks through people. And her quote was this, you hear what you're tuned into. I'm like doing the dishes, and we're like in the kitchen prepping for the birthday party, and she says, yeah, you know what, you hear what you are tuned into. And it perfectly sums up what I want you to apply tonight. If you didn't realize it by now, Kelly is the brains behind this operation. I'm the face. But every week she gives me an application. And she also reminded me of a parable that's been passed around on the internet over the years, but it's a perfect parable. It's not, again, it's not true, but it really illustrates the point. It's titled Hearing the Cricket. Let me read this to you. It's not going to be on the screen, so you might want to close your eyes and just kind of focus. Says, a Native American and his friend were in downtown New York City walking near Times Square in Manhattan. It was during the noon lunch hour, and the streets were filled with people. Cars were honking their horns. Taxicabs were squealing around corners. Sirens were wailing. The sounds of the city were almost deafening. Suddenly, the Native American said, I hear a cricket. His friend said, what? You must be crazy. You couldn't possibly hear a cricket in all this noise. No, I'm sure of it, the Native American said. I hear a cricket. That's crazy, said the friend. The Native American listened carefully for a moment, then walked across the street to a big cement planter where some shrubs were growing. He looked in the bushes beneath the branches, and sure enough, he located a small cricket. His friend was utterly amazed. That's incredible, said the friend. You must have superhuman ears. No, said the Native American. My ears are no different than yours. It all depends on what you're listening for. But that can't be, said the friend. I could never hear a cricket in this noise. Yes, it's true, came the reply. It depends on what is really important to you. Here, let me show you. He reaches into his pocket, pulls out a few coins, and discreetly drops them on the sidewalk. And then, with the noise of the crowded street still blaring in their ears, they noticed every head turn within a 20-foot radius, glancing down where the coins dropped. See what I mean, asked the Native American? We can only hear what we're listening for. And we listen for what's really important to us. Yeah, it's a parable. Probably got in your inbox at some point or a few years in your email. But the parable gives us a few truths. Number one, we need to ask ourselves, how important is the voice of God right now in our lives? I didn't say how important is going to church on Sunday nights, but how important is listening and tuning into and focusing on the voice of God? So that's one thing just to internally reflect on. The second is this, is that the world is filled with noise. And most of the noise we have in our lives, we can block out. There's literal noise, there's figurative noise in our lives. And I'm going to pray in this moment, these are just some application points, that God speaks to you guys right now. This is how I'm going to wrap up. There's literal noise and there's figurative noise in our lives that drowns out the voice of God. And my prayer right now, and I don't need to pray with my eyes closed, is that God speaks to each of you and you know the noise that you need to tune out so that you can tune in the voice of God. Here's some literal noise. driving to and from work, sports talk radio on every minute here in the car, watching TV for several hours each night, talking on the phone for hours on end, which is more about gossip than anything in the conversations, listening to music that has lyrics that doesn't exactly make God smile. If you're the parent of small children, you definitely have some literal noise in your life, and I'm not saying get rid of your kids. Tune them out. I actually have the amazing ability to do that. Kelly's jealous. I can do that. But some getting rid of the little noise is easy. Turn off the radio. Turn off the TV or minimize it. Get rid of your TV maybe. Keep your phone calls short. If it starts going on this gossip kind of trail, you don't need to, you know, just kind of take it back in the right direction. Maybe have someone watch your kids every once in a while so you can just be still. There's a lot of literal noise, ways we can reduce the amount of it. Because God's always speaking to us, and there's often too much noise in our lives, so we don't hear him. There's also some figurative noise, though. And this is harder. It's filling our days with so many activities is figurative noise. Just pound. We don't have time for God. I got to read my book, Faith. You can show me that picture as we're driving to our relative's house. And I'll see in the rearview mirror. Right? We fill our days with so many activities. Maybe there's an ongoing pattern of sin in your life you're just struggling with. You're giving into. And that's just putting earmuffs on God's voice. You can't hear his whispers when you're engaged in it. It's hard. We need to get rid of that noise too. We really do. And by the way, we're a church that believes in the power of prayer. At the end of our night tonight, we're going to have a prayer team up front. And if there is something in your life that you need to give to God, to surrender to God, to repent from, and to turn to God, come up and pray with our team. They're confidential in their prayer requests. And there's power in that. There's power in the external confession of that. That stuff that's in the darkness gets brought into light. And the darkness has no ability to stay dark then. Bring that stuff into light. Looking back to my story, I think the reason I heard that whisper of God in the basement, tell me not to miss that moment with faith, is I have been intentionally reducing the amount of noise in my life. I gave out that experiencing Lent handout a few weeks ago. This is the third Sunday of Lent. I've been practicing what I've been preaching, waking up every day, haven't missed a day, spending about an hour or so reading my Bible and praying and journaling and doing stuff like that. Kelly and I have been watching a whole lot less TV. Two nights, and I'm not like pat myself saying, hey, super Christian here, but there's two nights over the past seven that we didn't watch TV at all. Turn it off. And instead, picked up a book. That's actually the reason why I was able to read that Hybels book all the way through, was didn't watch all that much TV. Fasting from sports talk radio. Haven't listened to it. Don't know what's going on in the sports world. And that's okay. The world's still rotating. I'm not dead. It's okay. Sometimes when I drive, I just sit in the silence. Sometimes when I drive, I pray out loud. Sometimes when I drive, I listen to podcasts so other pastors from around the country can feed me spiritually. Fasting from surfing the internet. Fasting from food a few days as well over Lent. Just ways that I have chosen to get rid of the noise in my life. My challenge to you is we need to get rid of the noise in all of our lives. The literal noise and the figurative noise, because God is speaking to us. That encounter I had with faith on Thursday, and God right in the middle of that, was not unique. We just need to have ears to hear. The title of my message was, did God stop speaking, or did we stop listening? I think you know the answer. It's not that we're intentional about it. We're just busy. And God wants us to be still and know that he is God. So he can speak to us and guide us. Maybe not as really supernaturally cool as a dream, but maybe. But he wants to speak to us in our everyday circumstances so we don't miss what God wants to do in and through us every day.